Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Lucky Few podcast, where we are shifting the narrative by shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome. This is Micah.
Mercedes.
And Heather is not with us today, but we are so excited about the two guests we have to share with you all. These ladies have been on the show before, and we are super happy to have them back to talk about all things COVID-19 and IEPs from a legal standpoint. So thank you for joining us, friends. Welcome to the Lucky Few podcast.
Hey, Heather here, and I'm so excited to get to share with you more about Jonas Paul Eyewear. They have a mission to help kids feel beautiful and confident in their glasses. Their at-home try-on kits, which are just a dollar, send you a variety of options of frames, and your kid gets to try them on and feel confident and great before ordering. And when you're ready to order, prescription glasses start at just $79, including prescription lenses. And right now, they're offering blue light blocking lenses, which are perfect for the extra screen time and online learning that so many of our kiddos are doing. So if you're in need of glasses, head to jonaspauleyewear.com and type in 15, the lucky few, for 15% off just for listening.
Well, hi, friends. Welcome to the Lucky Few podcast.
Hi.
Hi, Merce. You know, we always want to jump in here, remind our lovely listeners that if you rate and review and subscribe to our podcast, beautiful, magical, great things will happen to you. Did you know that, Mercedes?
Oh my goodness. I have felt that before when I
rate. Yeah. Good. Because it's like daisies fall from the sky on your head and chocolate appears in your hand. It's really amazing. So all you listeners, that's all we want for you. We just are telling you so that you can have that experience too. So Mercedes, tell us how you're doing. We haven't talked in a while about life and house and everything.
So we are in San Diego area now, and this is where we bought our home, our very first home. So we're doing all the fixer-upper things right now with having four kids and now the holidays upon us. So our house just kind of looks half done and I'm in love with it. Is that silly?
Yay. I'm so glad.
We're really excited to be here. We've just felt the cold weather, but I also love going to the beach when it's cold, like being all bundled up and still walking on the sand, no pressure to get in the water.
It's
so fun. So we're just happy to be back by the beach and in our own home that we get to make memories.
So good. Your first Christmas is coming up.
First Christmas. So we're going to hopefully host for Thanksgiving and Christmas. I'm kind of being greedy like that this year. I'm like, our new home, let me host. Come on. So I'm trying to take all the holidays for myself.
Good. And Thanksgiving is coming out. I mean, it's happening next week. So it's happening. It didn't get canceled, Thanksgiving.
No. Ironically, they can't cancel things within your home. Kind of. I don't know. I guess that's up for debate. Uh-oh, I wasn't trying to debate. Okay.
Oh, good. Well, we're like doing our fix-it projects have been all learning endeavors. I'm just not handy and Chris is not naturally handy, but I'm kind of loving it. I'm learning some things.
Yay.
So yeah, our new house life is coming along, though we have no furniture in our living room still.
Okay.
So all the more room for Ace to run in circles.
100%.
Well, let's jump straight into what we're talking about today. We are super excited to have Vicky Brett and Amanda Sologi from the Inclusive Education Project here with us today. They have so much knowledge to add to all of us who are trying to navigate IEPs, especially right now during COVID times when we are doing distance learning or navigating if school's going to stay open much longer. So let's talk a little bit about Vicki and Amanda. Vicki grew up in Southern California and attended UC Riverside and received a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science with a minor in philosophy before becoming a very active Whittier Law School student and alumnus. Vicki's committed to strengthening her clients who come to her disheartened and beaten down by the current education system. Because Vicki is bilingual, she represents and empowers many monolingual Spanish-speaking families living in Southern California. And then we also have Amanda here. Amanda Sologi received a degree in child and adolescent development, specializing in education from California State University, North Ridge, and a Juris Doctorate from Whittier Law School. But Amanda's career is so much more than practicing law. She uses her expertise as a tool to advocate for the differently abled community. And this passion is what led her and Vicki to establish their nonprofit, the Inclusive Education Project. We're so excited to have them here.
So excited. And it's fun because this is their second time being on our show. And It's so fun when we can have friends back. You can find their episode on episode 39 that came out September 2nd, 2019. So you can listen to that first interview we had with them and be excited about the second conversation during this really unique time in history.
Yes. So welcome back to the show, Amanda and Vicki.
Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited to be back. I can't believe it was September of last year. It seems like a world ago.
Totally a world ago. Well, since it was so long ago, can you give our listeners a little refresh on what the Inclusive Education Project does and how it came to be?
Sure. So it is our nonprofit. When Amanda and I were baby attorneys, we had always kind of discussed having a nonprofit law firm, and we were able to really launch it now, you know, six years ago was just the concept of the nonprofit, you know, existing to empower and really educate the community. And in the last couple of years, it's really evolved to include a legal department now. So everything's kind of under one house of the Inclusive Education Project. So the way that we're educating people and starting the conversation, as we like to say it, is we have a podcast. So we have the Inclusive Education Project podcast, which you lovely ladies were on. And so that's our way of, you know, really trying to have a lot of different conversations with so many different, I mean, in the last year, we've had so many great guests that help us learn more about this world of special education. And then of course we have the legal side, right? That we're going to really get into with you ladies in of advocating on behalf of children with special needs and really navigating these new waters. You know, we used to pride ourselves on thinking outside of the box. And now we don't even know what the heck the box is. So it's
the box was thrown out this year.
Elise, did I hit all the highlights, Amanda? Is there anything you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, mostly when we provide advocacy services, it runs the gamut from helping families through the IEP process, navigating assessments, to if we need to file complaints. And we do provide, I think, a little bit more than half of our services are full pro bono to the families, and then what we consider low bono. So we really try as much as we can to be in that collaborative mode if we can, because we recognize that, you know, schools and families, they have a relationship for a long time, sometimes 18 plus years. And so it's important to be able to try to bridge the gap. But, you know, at times, unfortunately, you know, complaints and the legal system has to be involved. But our hope always, even when we get into the legal system, is if we can still bring families and the school back together, because there often are so many teachers and administrators and therapists that want to do right by these students, but they don't always have the tools to do it. So if we can help get them the tools, then that's, you know, our main goal.
Now with COVID-19, we know that it can be hard for schools to implement all the support the kids might normally have in a school setting. Have you seen a lot of students with their IEPs just not met because of COVID-19? And what have parents been contacting you about? I'm sure you have a lot to share.
Yeah. So, I mean, since March has been a whirlwind, it's been very crazy. You know, we've had the gamut of families coming to us. From, you know, at the beginning, it was, what do we even do? To now we're getting into, you know, we're 6 months plus since when distance learning began, and we still have some schools that really are not implementing the IEP. So in many cases, it's the school is not implementing the services that are in the IEP to students really struggling even accessing anything that's being offered. We have some teams that are trying to be really innovative, but there's only so much that can be done through a screen for a student who's nonverbal or can't read or needs behavioral intervention that, you know, you can't reach through the screen and help redirect the student. I think the biggest challenge has been that access piece. So we've seen families struggling, and the mental health side has really shown through. It's even kiddos and families that didn't struggle with mental health deficits are really struggling now. The anxiety and the trauma that's really come from being ripped from the schools so out of the blue. When we first closed down schools, we didn't know. We all thought it was a couple weeks, and it's been a lot longer than that. So, you know, yeah, we've seen a lot.
Yeah, and just to kind of piggyback off of that, just to kind of give your listeners a bit of landscape. So there was a lot of rumors going around in March when the shutdown first happened, you know, even as we were getting to April, May, you know, are there going to be waivers? You know, what's going to happen? The law's not going to exist for special education kids. And particularly in California, Governor Newsom had passed he'd written into law two bills, SB 117 and SB 98. And SB 117 really was just applicable to March to July. So essentially they kind of recategorized that time as a time of enrichment. All the instructional days and minutes that a kiddo would have was really already done by February. They just kind of reorganized things. So even though there was a lot of emphasis on trying to be creative and trying to at least provide something, I think in terms of just consistency for the child, I don't think that was really expressed to parents. So you had these parents just go into complete like, oh my gosh, you know, what are we going to do? I'm the teacher. The expectations were super high. We all acted as if we were not in the middle of a global pandemic. I think those expectations are still now in here, but, you know, now looking back, you know, SB 117 really, you know, laxed a lot of things. So there was, for instance, you know, if you were in the middle of assessments or anything like that, you know, it was kind of quashed, you know, there's going to be extensions of that, you know, the timeline, you know, getting records for your child, you know, normally they have 5 days to provide access to you for those records. That was it. But it wasn't anything major other than those kind of little things. You know, we were still able to get a lot of work done in terms of having IEP meetings for our clients. Then with SB 98, there was a couple, you know, there was no extensions, there's no waivers. So districts were expected to operate, you know, within the confines of the IEP. So if you're having speech and language, if you're having occupational therapy, if you're having all these services, the expectation was that you would be providing that. Obviously, it may be in a different model, right? It might be virtual. And what we were also seeing with a lot of teams this school year was having IEP meetings and having to have kind of an emergency plan in place. So what plan do you have if some of the schools here in Southern California have opened up? So what if you know, close down again? And opening up, I mean, one district, the kiddos are only going 2 hours a day. So just even that, and I think the biggest, and I'm sure your listeners can relate, just even to the individual classroom, to the school, to the middle school, to the districts, to the counties. Everybody is doing something completely different. There is no uniformity. And I think that when I say that we knew the box to a certain extent of what it was, of what special education was and how it was being done for the most part. And that has really been the biggest adjustment in continuing to advocate even stronger for, you know, and knowing the law. It's pretty laid out, you know, but we still have team members every day be like, oh no, we don't have to do that. And it's just like, where did you see that? Because that isn't
right. The one consistency that has been since March and even before is the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, has stood. There has been no changes, even though there's been rumors that Betsy DeVos was going to allow waivers and states were going to try to, you know, ask for forgiveness and the laws would change. Nothing has happened. You know, certain states, like Vicki was saying, have instituted certain, you know, either guidelines or requirements, certain lacks of like timelines, but the substance of the law providing a free, appropriate public education hasn't gone away. Implementing an IEP hasn't gone away. And so what is important for families to know is that whatever your rights were before the pandemic hit, they still are in existence. And so that's important because schools are not necessarily being told that. In fact, we talk with, you know, opposing counsel's attorneys that represent school districts all the time that are advising their clients differently because they anticipated waivers might occur and they didn't. So, you know, when we look at this from this lens of, you know, where do we go, you know, how do we try to get these kids back on track? We can start from the position of, well, what was the IEP before the pandemic hit and what has been provided since? And in many, many, many cases from March until June, it was zero. And then, you know, part of that was, well, we thought, well, schools are trying to figure it out. Let's, you know, give them a chance for a second. But, you know, we're now in November and, you know, since March, that's been a lot of time to kind of figure out how can we be innovative. And unfortunately, we're still seeing kiddos. I mean, I was in an IEP yesterday via Zoom that, you know, they had the whole rigmarole of here are the emergency procedures and we have to write this into the IEP that, you know, this is what we're going to do if we have to close down again. But unfortunately, that's all just words on a document. It doesn't really provide substance to how are we addressing what happened the last 6 months? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not seeing that consistency of the teams really recognizing, oh, we should have provided 60 minutes of speech every week from March until June, and we didn't. How were we making up for that? I'd say almost every IEP I've been in since the beginning of the school year, the student has regressed in one area or another. And the second part of the conversation of once we decide that there has been regression, which most of our kids with IEPs, we know there's going to be regression. Where do we go from there? There's not a black and white clear answer to that. There has been guidance from the Office of Civil Rights, the Federal Department of Education, that has said if students have regressed during this time period, they are entitled to compensatory education. That IEP team needs to meet, discuss it, and figure out how to move forward. And you know, the gray area of that is that there's some experts saying that that conversation occurs now, some that say that conversation doesn't occur until we're back in person, which who knows when that's going to be. So that's kind of the landscape that we're in right now.
In your experience and opinion, and Micah, I would love for you to weigh in, when students have regressed and their option now is to for their team to make up for that via Zoom, I would wonder if that is the right call or waiting to in person, which is a bummer because that's more time. But what I have seen, because I'll remind you guys that Sunflower is a homeschooler, so her world hasn't changed too much. But what I have seen is that Zoom can sometimes cause our friends with disabilities to shut down. Like that isn't the best way to help catch them up. It's kind of even more of a roadblock. So what do you tell your parents? So yes, so they have missed speech and they should have been getting it during that time. How are we going to make up for it? Now are you going to like is that actually going to be better? Or I don't know. I feel like you guys might be in a tricky spot because you want to make sure all these services are getting met, like, and recognized. But then also if it's through Zoom and that's not the best for the child, it's not working, then what's next?
Yeah. So early on in the summer, our governor here in California did institute guidelines, what's considered essential services that can occur in person. And certain IEP services, even back in June, were considered essential services that can be in person, behavioral support, mental health support. So we knew back then that those could be offered. Schools were not doing it across the board as they could have. Since then, I think a lot of districts I've seen have had board decisions about whether or not they're going to provide certain in-person services or not. And more as the coming months have happened, they've allowed more in-person, especially for students on IEPs. All the states are kind of different on what they consider an essential service, but what our recommendation is, if the family is comfortable with having someone either come to their home or the student going to a center, if we have to be engaging with outside agencies, private, either non-public or fully private agencies to provide these additional services, then that's probably what's going to be appropriate. It's going to be a case-by-case basis decision the IEP team needs to talk about is the student accessing the services through Zoom or not? And if they're not, then they need to be considering in person. And if the family doesn't, the student or the family is high risk and even in person in their home, just they're not comfortable, it might be something that has to wait. But doesn't mean we can't have the conversation about what needs to be provided now. And then, there might be some maneuvering around. We might have to really think outside the box on how to serve these students.
That's so great to hear that you are working to find outside services, because it does feel like, I think as a parent, I've felt kind of hopeless in what we were given, especially in the spring when all of the services continued to be offered to ACE the exact amount of minutes, but really all it was me sitting with the therapist and the therapist saying, well, why don't you try this? And it felt, it was just really hard for me to become a therapist at home. And I thought about that so much in terms of injustice too. Like, I am a person who, our family has the money for me to be able to have time with, at home with my kids during the day, during this uncertain time. I've been able to stop working so I could be with ACE during that time. And that's just not that many people who can do that. And I'm thinking about that too, in terms of we've recently moved to New Jersey. I've been really happy with what is offered and what's available for ACE through the school district. But even with, they had to shut down his half days that they're offering right now for 2 weeks because of COVID in the schools. I thought they did an amazing job in their preparedness and how they were able to work with him online. But of course, I had to be fully present the entire time. There's just no way to make virtual learning something that is fair for everyone, because it's just not, unless you have an adult, especially for our kids who are nonverbal, unless there's an adult present to help them through the tasks. There's no way for them to get anything out of it.
I think that you hit the nail on the head. The one thing that this pandemic has done is really shown, the civil, unrest and injustice on so many different levels. It doesn't matter if you make the most money or you don't, you can get COVID. Did everybody have to stay, at home and try to do their best? Absolutely. But the population that has been hit the hardest, and when I speak about the expectations, are the 800 plus thousand moms who left the workforce from March to June, because they needed to be present for their children. They needed to make decisions about education for their children. And like I said, the expectations were just so, so high, and it was impossible. It is an impossible situation. And I have a case where there is a mom who is a teacher within the own district, and she has her classroom of middle schoolers. She has her child, and it's an impossible situation. And when a district is willing to try to do something, I think, and hearing the parent, I feel like those IEP meetings have gone a heck of a lot further than IEP meetings where they're just like, oh, well, like, you know, here, or even this, the speech session where it's just like, we'll try this, you know, instead of really acknowledging, like, you know what, maybe we take a break, you know, and we don't do this. And I think people are just not being human about it. And like, you know, Amanda had said, we all thought it was going to be a few weeks, you know, as naive as that sounded, you know, it was like, well, if everyone does their part, you know, this is what we're going to do. So, you know, that's been the hardest for Amanda and I, obviously, as a new mom, and me, I still feel, even though I almost have a 2-year-old as a newish mom, you know, the decisions that one needs to make. And it wasn't that we didn't understand that before becoming moms, but I think it puts another layer on top that enriches the way that we can advocate on behalf of these parents. And really put that as a focus, because yes, as much as it's about the child, guess who's teacher? So when I was at an IEP meeting and they're like, yeah, he passed the school, and mom's like, absolutely not, you know, and they're like, well, let's talk about this. And it's just like, who's with the child and who's able to really garner this? It's mom. So I think, you know, those teams that are actually listening, you know, they may not be offering solutions that are complete and total. I don't think anybody has the answers to that now, but those teams that, you know, and we get it. There's unions that the districts have to deal with. There's like, you know, who's going to come back to school.
There's a lot of red tape.
Yeah. Even if the kiddos come back, it's not the same. In person is completely changed. There, you know, some districts have the plexiglass around all the
desk. Some of the kids are still doing virtual, even though they're in the physical classroom. Oh, I have this one IEP I went to, and they talked about what the hybrid would look like, the students going into campus. And it was a high school, but it still was, the teacher wasn't even in the classroom. The students show up with their devices and they sit at their desks with their computers and they see their teacher through the screen. You know, so as much as like for the families that, you know, they need their child to be in person simply because nobody can be at home with them because both parents have to work because financially they have to do that. It's, I mean, the inequities that we've seen through this pandemic, I mean, we kind of knew it being in the special ed world already that, you know, families of low socioeconomic status are disproportionately affected with special education. But even more so, we're seeing it across the board. And the one thing that like kind of we've taken from this is that the world is kind of noticing more. They're talking about education in a way that it's never been talked about before. We had it as a big part of, you know, campaigns across the board with this past election. We are seeing people realize that education has such a big impact and how important education is, because now it's not just parents sending their kids to school and not thinking about it, except for when their kid has a report card. They're dealing with it every day, all day, which moms and parents of students on IEPs already were dealing with all day, every day. And now the rest of the world is kind of realizing. And I've noticed this is like the most interesting time to have IEPs because, like Vicky said, it's the parent that's being the teacher most of the time. So we've always had IEPs that are parent says they see one thing and the team says they see something else. And everyone says, well, it's a different environment. Well, where is the environment now? The student is at home and that's the learning environment. So present levels should be written from the parent's perspective now. This is probably the first time ever that a parent can really dictate what is in the present levels because they're the ones that are seeing it. I had an IEP where we were talking about behavior and the parent was talking about how they looked at the behavioral logs that the aide who was on Zoom was taking, and the students' microphones were always on mute. Well, that's just the way that class functioned, unless they were allowed to unmute it. And this student has different maladaptive behaviors that sound different. They don't look different. So the stemming looks very different from aggressive behaviors only if you're in person, because the pitch of the student's voice and the volume of the student's voice was very different if he was being self-injurious versus just stemming. And so because he was muted, the aide was recording data very differently than, fortunately, this family had ABA services in the home. So it wasn't just mom. It was, you know, a professional ABA specialist that was taking the data. But, you know, just something as simple as that, that, you know, we don't realize that there is such a difference, but that, you know, parents have a lot more to say than I think IEP teams give them credit for. And it's now that I think they're starting to realize that there is value in what the parents say. So it's that double-edged sword of like, everything's so tough right now and there's so many inequities, but we are, you know, and we're trying to take advantage of that, of saying, this is the time we need the rest of the world to be thinking about education and about disability rights. I know listening to President-elect Joe Biden do his concession speech, he talked about disability for the first time we've ever had a president-elect speak about it in a speech after an election. It's huge. This is something that we haven't seen before. And I really hope that this pandemic does, you know, bring people to think about education and disability rights in a different way. And we don't just think about it, we actually act upon it.
Whew. That's good stuff. It got me all fiery.
I need to like same.
Shake it off.
We can only get through this together. So if we're not thinking about everybody, we're never going to get through this. We just aren't. And I think that that's the biggest pill to swallow. Is the biggest thing for me was that people just don't care. And I know that. I do special education law. Like, people don't even know what that is, right? And with our podcast, we found that it's not that we're making people care, we're bringing it just into their world, because, you know, as humans, you know, we come into this world alone and we go out alone, but I don't think that one could survive alone. And, you know, I've been thinking about that a lot in the work that we do, and, you know, for the families that are able to, you know, dedicate one parent to the child, you know, you take those notes, you take that data, you are the teacher, you know, and you make your voice be heard at those IEPs. And those other parents that are not able to do that, it is okay. You know, your child will be okay. It's because nobody's happy. Even the parent that's able to do that, you know, they're not going to get any further than you or your child or anything like that. You know, I think that, you know, we've had some amazing teachers, you know, that have really been able to think and reach their children, even as they're, you know, zombies, right? Like, they're little zombies on the Zoom. You know, you have some breaks and you're having them be fun and really bringing the spirit of, you know, why you were excited as the five-year-old to go to school, right? You're gonna see your friends, and they're able to just get a little bit of that, you know, via the Zoom sessions. And, you know, I think that that's the biggest thing. Whatever decision you have had to make is probably the best for your family, and it's going to be okay. It doesn't feel like that, and that's okay, but I think that's the biggest thing that I've seen with my clients, is that they're just overwhelmed 100% of the time. And it's hard. It's very, very hard. You know, Amanda and I shouldn't have jobs just pre-COVID, you know, and we were worried, you know, we didn't know what would happen. And, you know, we still do have jobs because it's not at the forefront. You know, they're making decisions on a higher level sometimes and they forget, which is unfortunate. And, you know, that's why, you know, we appreciate you and your podcast, you know, for bringing those issues to light and for having us on so that we can try to explain a little bit of the background that just kind of turns into white noise. Because for our families, I mean, they're living it day in and day out, and it is tough. It really is.
So tough. Have you been in contact with anyone who wants to take legal action to make sure IEP demands are met?
I laugh, and I should laugh. It's not
funny. It's not funny.
Yeah.
100%. Yes.
Yeah.
We
even our clients that were happy with everything before the pandemic, that we've never filed a complaint ever are now considering it because we're in a different world. So yeah, unfortunately, and you know, and there is legal action to take, of course, but you know, I'd say more often than not, the IEPs I've had this school year, I've had probably had more IEP teams willing to come to the table and say, I realize things aren't working, what do we do? And while they may not have the answers, we try as best as we can to give them the answers. And so we've been working with a lot of our clients, both our current clients and, you know, new clients on what can we do? You know, what's going to make things easier for this child? And we bring that to the table. And I think more often than not, the teams are, okay, how can we provide this? The schools are, at least some of them are really trying to push their boards to allow for some in-person. And we've seen that change in the last few months. You know, so our hope is that in many cases, we don't have to take the full legal action of going to a trial. I mean, most of our cases settle in California anyway, but we hope that teams can continue to try to be collaborative. It might end up in a settlement agreement, like always, but that's better than having to drag it through court, which right now is through Zoom.
Have you guys seen any good models for how schools are helping kids get the support at home? You kind of mentioned it, like the individual teachers have really done that, but any other examples that you've seen have worked for your clients?
Yeah, I mean, I had a client whose teacher was just a gem of a teacher. She had coordinated time for her. She had a smaller classroom of Mod Severe, and she would come like and be on their porch and kind of had her whiteboard and kind of go over some basic concepts if there was anything that mom was having. I know, it's just a gem of a woman. And so that was really great. Obviously with summer, you know, a lot of the teachers have been going through trainings and things like that. I think the teachers that were already kind of pulling at everything, you know, videos and trying to incorporate more of just the chats and just fun things, I think they have been able to kind of reach the kiddos in a better way, because kiddos, you know, especially the younger ones, I mean, some of them had iPads in their hands at like 3, right? Like they know how to navigate everything. But even for our kiddos that weren't able to do that, you know, providing just like little kits and materials, they would mail home, you know, and get, you know, the parents to have these fabulous ideas of, you know, why don't you cook? And then this is how you talk about fractions and all this stuff. I think those teachers that had a little bit more, there was no rule book for March to June. So we saw a lot of creativity. This school year, it seems like things are kind of tighter. I think that there are still some teachers that are doing some great things. However, it kind of seems like unless the principal or like even the director of SPED, it's all top down. So if they're not
right,
encouraging that or support and or supporting their teachers in that, we haven't seen that as much. Or at least I haven't for my.
Yeah, time. I think there's been a lot more like guidelines put in place, like even with IEP teams saying we have to go through our emergency procedure checklist and put that on the IEP, and they go through it, but it's not really discussed. It's just, this is what we put on the IEP, and it's almost like no one's listening. You know, I think the more movement I've seen have been the schools that are starting to go back a little bit hybrid, where students are in cohorts and maybe they go to school 2 days a week and then they're virtual 2 days a week. And then there's the like off day in the middle. I've had IEP teams say, Wednesdays are our days where no one's really on campus. We can have the student come. And even the days where they're not supposed to be on campus, we've had either aides or RSP teachers or whatnot say, hey, I can sit with them, you know, help them with their independent work. So I've had a couple of students that through the IEP, we've been able to discuss how they can be on campus more. But it's hard because I have also had many other clients that they can't be in person. The student themselves or the family members are high risk. So even the thought of doing hybrid is just not possible. So those, I think, are the students that are struggling the most. Have had many, you know, where the parents have had to, you know, stop working and, you know, do full time. The families are considering charter independent study programs just so that the parent is the one doing the instruction. Because what do you do when a student closes the computer? There's no redirection that can occur from the teacher there or the aide, no matter what they're doing. The student closes the computer, you know, there's no more instruction. So, you know, any way that the teachers are helping hear parent hear strategies is one that's helped. It's across the board very different from school to school.
So different. I do remember Heather mentioning how Mason has an aide virtual, and I laughed out loud.
Right. It was like, it's comical. What?
Yeah. I think the only aides that I've seen work virtual are the older students or the students who are a little bit more high functioning. So I've had a couple where they can go to a new tab in their Chromebook or whatnot, and they're opening up like a private Zoom session. And so there's like a chat feature. And so either the aide is like chatting through the chat feature during instruction and helping to check for understanding, or they're saying, hey, let's move into our private Zoom and let's chat. That seems to work a little bit, but for behaviors, certainly it's not doing anything because
they're far away. They as well not exist. It's crazy.
How much of behavior support plans are often, you know, using hand over hand or saying, let's go outside and take a break, or tapping them on the shoulder. You can't do any of that through a computer.
I mean, some have had the virtual aide, no camera, on mute. So it's like, what? Like,
so nothing.
Just taking data on
so
the
nothing. Square,
right. On the little square that's right here. So if I was doing that, like, what am I really going to say about Mercedes? Like, oh, okay, she's moved in her chair a couple of days. Like, what? Like, there's no saying, like, so ridiculous. And it's just, it is comical. And it's just like, you guys think about it. Just because you can offer it, like, think about if it's really needed. So for instance, we always talk about that. There's so many times in IEPs where the accommodations are just blown over. Like, there's like, okay, same accommodations. It's like, okay, you have 15 accommodations here, you know, some from elementary school, now we're in middle school. Do they still need all these, you know? Right. And you have to talk to the teachers. It's like, why do we need the behavior? You know, is it because they can actually do and actually help the child? Or is it just somebody that is, I think, like, pointless, right? Because it's like, how much can you tell in the box? So yeah, it's been interesting, to say the least, working with these districts.
You guys have so much to say. I feel like we could talk about this for so long, and we could tell, I feel like I have so many stories to tell just from my own experience with ACE. But I'm wondering if there's anything else you want to add, anything else that you want to make sure our listeners know before we close our conversation down.
I think the biggest thing for parents to remember and consider is have that IEP. Even if your annual isn't up yet, have an IEP now. Talk through what was in the IEP, what's being offered now, and at least document your challenges. So if maybe you're not in the position to fight for anything else now, maybe there's nothing that can be offered because you don't feel comfortable being in person and the student needs in person, and maybe nothing's going to happen until June. You're at least documenting, you're giving the school district the opportunity to know what are the things that you're struggling with, and make sure you're documenting what's occurring, because these IEPs don't have to change right now. So we need to have it documented what's being offered versus what should be offered. And even at the very least, having that conversation, I think a lot of parents have expressed to me, you know, I've shared these struggles with the team, and you get into an IEP meeting and not everyone knows that this is a challenge that the parents express, because maybe they said it in a Zoom or maybe they said it in an email, but not everyone read that email or they weren't hearing it because they're overwhelmed too. So having everyone in one place not only allows everyone to hear what the problem is, but then everyone can brainstorm. And maybe you think there's really nothing we can do to solve this until we're in person, but someone else can come up with, hey, I'm doing this with another student. So at the very least, I think that's a starting point that if you have not had an IEP this school year, you should now, because it really, every single student should have had an IEP to talk about distance learning.
Absolutely. Request it now. They got 30 days to schedule it. That'll be right before winter break. You kind of open the door for starting a discussion of what are we going to do about this regression, right? Yep. You're documenting it. You know, maybe you're even saying, you know, since he wasn't given his individualized reading instruction, you know, at this time, I'm going to privately, you know, seek out that, right? And have those conversations, lay that groundwork. Because if you have that in an IEP, obviously it's documented, and that may help you recover, you know, reimbursement for the private services that you're doing. That's what I'm seeing a lot of now. And I think also, just as a final note, the expectations that we have for ourselves, for our families, and for our students, it is difficult. I mean, I feel like everybody, you know, it's just like, okay, this is new life. No, we are still in a pandemic. People, hundreds of thousands of people have died. This is not a time to just kind of go back and bury your head in the sand, which I'm starting to see. I'm starting to see that with, well, I'm not going to accept this late assignment. Okay, well, one, he has an accommodation for a couple of days. Two, why don't we rethink this? I think that those expectations, I don't know why they went back to where they were before, but they really need to just stop and really need to think through it. And like I said before, the only way we are going to get through this is together. And so I hope that people take that with them in their hearts and really hold that and are able to share that, you know, notion that we need each other to get through this.
It's so good and important. And it's, I think as a mom, it's so good for me to be reminded, even though I need to all the time, that I need to document, I need to like write it down, I need to be on top of it. And so we just appreciate all the good things you guys have to say, how much you make it something that feels so complicated feel accessible to us. So we really appreciate that. If you have any good news to share about anyone in your life with a disability, Vicki and Amanda, we're going to jump over and hear from our sponsor. And when we come back, we're going to have some good news.
Jonas Paul Eyewear was founded by Ben and Laura Harrison when their son Jonas was born nearly blind at birth. This was extremely unexpected news that no parent prepares for, but it gave them a window into the world of blindness. Ben and Laura could have let Jonas's visual impairments dampen their spirits, but instead, they used this new challenge as fuel to launch Jonas Paul Eyewear, which now specializes in glasses for kids and teens ages 4 to 16 years old. They have at-home try-on kits for just $1, which allows your child to try on the glasses for a week without ever leaving your home. And once you're ready to order, their prescription glasses start at only $79, including prescription lenses. All you have to do is head to jonaspauleyewear.com to learn more. Make sure you use 15, the lucky few, at checkout for 15% off any future orders.
All right, friends, it's time for some good news. Thanksgiving good news, Thanksgiving good news. Yeah. Ooh. Once again, Mercedes just really had the dance down for the song today. I've been thinking all week that I have a good news to share, you guys. So when shutdown started in March and I was feeling very like I was trying to educate my son all by myself, I pulled out my Mrs. Brown sheets, my Mrs. Brown reading materials. And listeners, if you want to go back to our episode with Mrs. Brown, Mercedes, how long ago was that? Like episode eight or something.
I know. It was like 2018, wasn't it?
Yeah. We love, so happy to learn at Mrs. Brown's house. And she has, you can subscribe to get her materials and her like literacy workbooks and stuff for children with Down syndrome. And so Ace and I started working on this, and he was unable to stay sitting in his seat. He would throw the crayon every time I put it in front of him. And for months, all the way from March through September, we did it just about every day, sitting down with like the same four books. I see a boy, I see a girl. And then, or like the color book, I see blue, I see orange. And we stopped when he went to school early September, when he got to go back. And I just pulled it out on Friday because he didn't have school last week. And I sat down with him. And after just like September through October of being in person in school, he sat in his chair, he held the crayon. And I, from on the other side of the table, I circled, I see blue. And I said, Ace, circle the word blue. And he took his crayon and he scratched over blue. And we turned the page and I said, I see red. Ace, circle red, scratched over red. Next page, scratched over orange. It was amazing. And I was like, dude, you've been reading all this time and you forgot to tell me. So it was really amazing. And I felt like, oh, all those months that felt like we were just doing nothing and that everything was aggressing, just such a sweet feeling to see him making strides.
Oh, I love that so much. I love that.
Incredible.
Let's see. Good news from Miss Sunny May. I just see we have just moved and she's really settled into our new home. It was a rough go for a little month, you know, but she has stopped asking about the pool and now she just asks about the beach. And so our old house had a pool and she is a fish in the water, but our new house does not have a pool, but we have the beach. So this I can do for her, the beach. And she's just settling in wonderful and loves our new home, loves her little room. And it's been good. I see now that we've crossed that threshold, like the hard transition is now a little bit over. I say that cautiously, but there's one part that's over, right? Now we've made this home. She has put that in her brain. This is our home. And I don't know. I'm just really excited about that.
That's so good. Do either of you guys, Amanda or Vicky, have some good news to share about a client or someone in your life?
Yeah, I do. It's been a long time client. I've almost had them for 10 years. They were like one of my first clients. And I've just seen him through so much. He was the kiddo, you know, in first grade that put his fist through a window and I see him now and he's set to graduate early, December, I think it was like right before Christmas Eve, like December 23rd, like the nature of Zoom and his private school that we were able to get him placed in, kind of looked at, you know, the unit that he needed. And if he just took an extra math class and doubled up on English, they presented it to him and said, hey, you could be done, you know, by December. And the family was going to move in the next year. And so he really, really wanted to graduate. And he's on track. He was like, I can do this. And we were all just like, are you sure? And it's just, he's going to be 18 in January. And just to have him, you know, get his diploma and just be able, you know, and his mom was like, oh, we can come back in May. Hopefully they have a graduation ceremony. And, you know, the autism track mind, he's just like, why? I'm starting my new, like for him, he wanted to move to Arizona and like start fresh. And he had told his mom, nobody will know I have autism there. And just like, you know, she's telling me and I'm like crying. I'm like, he's so amazing. But like, you know, in his mind, he wants to be in charge of telling people because he's not ashamed of it. But it was just every kind of like how you're the kid sister and everybody knows your older sister, you know, through high school. Like that's how it's felt for him. And it makes me so happy that he's just, this is a big accomplishment for him. And, you know, 10 years ago, I don't know that we would have thought that. So that's a bit of good news that I've had. That's just makes me, now that we're in November, I'm like, oh my God, December's around the corner. So.
It really is. It's coming up so quick. Yeah, I have a not completely similar, but I have a client that I've had for a long time. He, I think started in pre-K in a full special education class, having extreme behaviors when I first met him. And he now transitioned this year to middle school. And he's been for a couple of years fully in gen ed and been doing very well. But he did struggle with some social anxiety and some anxiety over work. And just, he's probably one of the few students who thrived during distance learning because the social anxiety wasn't there. And his school has started going back in person the last couple of weeks. And he had, so obviously there's been so many transitions, and he was a student who used to have so many troubles with transitions. And he's just, and we were worried like, oh, he's going back to school. There's peers and it's middle school, which is the most social nerve-wracking experience anyone can go through. And he's actually been very successful with it so far. I'm going to knock on wood. We have an IEP in a couple of weeks to check in, but so far everything's been going really well. And I think he has a team that it's one of those teams that really went above and beyond and seeing, okay, what can we do? They looked at his years of IEPs to really understand what were his needs. Which new teams don't always do. They look at the current IEP and say, okay, this is the student's needs. Not anticipating that a need that, you know, is kind of gone away and the student has made progress doesn't mean they can't come back when there's a new environment. So I think that's really helped. So, you know, I'm really happy that the team and, you know, he has just really done so well in despite of all the challenges this year.
Love that. Teams that are doing the right thing for their students. So good. Amanda and Vicki, thanks again for being with us. And we just want to thank all of our listeners out there for joining us again this week. Always, friends, we want to hear from you. We love hearing your good news. So leave us a voicemail or DM on Instagram and share about your family and the good news about your loved one with Down syndrome or other disabilities. And if you have a product or a business that wants to help us shout the worth of people with Down syndrome, we'd love to partner with you. You can email hello@theluckyfewpodcast.com for sponsorship opportunities. And as always, a huge thank you to our editor, Josh Avis, our producer, Val Schleter, our sponsor, and all of you who have shared the Lucky Few podcast with friends who have listened faithfully and cheered us on. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Then daisies will fall from the sky and chocolate will appear in your hands, just as we said. And remember that you, dear listeners, supporting your loved one with Down syndrome, you are a shouter of worth and a narrative shifter. So keep on keeping on. We are cheering for you. We'll see you the next time on the Lucky Few Podcast. Bye.